need a laugh as a helping people. But Tompa's talking to these funny people. He's asking what they find in the town stories. Can somebody yell out the name of the show, please? It's my mate, Water Toaster. Oh, it's my mate, Water Toaster. Yeah, yeah, it's my mate, Water Toaster.
Hello, welcome along. This is yet another episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster. My name's Tom Price, and my guest today is the fabulous comedian Ahir Shah. Ahir, hello, welcome.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Very good indeed. We should point out straight away, you've had a lovely pre-pod croissant. How was that?
Extremely soft.
Was it?
Actually, yeah. I was, there wasn't time to warm it up. So, you know, that was a concern. Yeah. But it really, no, the people of France know what they're doing on that front.
They really do. They also know that they're killing you. I think croissants are kind of, they're weaponized. Have you seen how much butter? Have you seen? Because they taste delicious. And like a lot of people will add butter and maybe a bit of jam to their croissant. The amount of butter, it's way more butter than actual bread stuff in a croissant. Way more.
Okay, I've seen that on the packet it says like, or butter croissant, and I'm like, oh well, that's good because butter's tasty and everything. But you're telling me that it's largely butter.
So
what I'm consuming.
If you got, say, you got a normal block of butter, like a supermarket block of butter, none of the spreadable bullshit, because that is bullshit.
250 g's.
Your classic 250 g's.
Yeah.
I would say it's probably got a third of one of those in it, like wrapped into the bread. You've just had a third.
In one croissant.
In one croissant. It's insane. Yeah.
Okay, right. So I think you'll find I've had two-thirds of a block of butter in that case.
Oh my God, you've double croissant.
Yeah. Because I didn't think it was...
Are you in a hotel at some sort of breakfast buffet? That's the only time I'd ever do that, or Christmas.
No, although it was brought to my flat yesterday by my parents, who had nabbed more than they needed from exactly that.
There you go.
Breakfast buffet.
There you go. But it's the only robbery that I'll allow. Burglarizing a breakfast buffet. That is the only robbery that's allowed. It's when my wife, and we will start the show shortly, when we were on honeymoon, my wife and I went to the Maldives, right, which is still to date the most expensive holiday we've ever had or will ever have, right? And they had a breakfast buffet that was just, it looked like you were at the funeral of a king every morning. It was insane. It was insane. Tables and tables and tables, and accommodating different breakfasts from around the world. So sushi, and obviously your croissant scenario, your cereal scenario. But food there was really expensive. So we used to steal from the breakfast buffet every morning in order to have lunch, because we were on that, you know, I don't know what it's called, the package where you don't have to pay for anything apart from lunch.
All inclusive.
Yeah, all inclusive apart from any additional meals. It wasn't all inclusive. It was like, I don't know what it is, but like part-time. Let's call it part-time. Let's call it semi-detached. And so you'd have to pay for lunch. And like, and we found on the first day, lunch cost, cause in Maldives, it was like 40 or 50 quid for lunch, just for a stat, like a sandwich. Yeah, right. So I'd go in with my cricket hat on and just flip it and literally put my arm like that, and just like I was sweeping crumbs away from a kid's post-kids meal into my hat, and then put the hat back on. Right?
Oh my God, like how Paddington always has a marmalade sandwich under his hat.
Exactly. Oh my God, I've only just connected those dots. I Paddingtoned. I'm so happy with that. All right, listen, let's dive in, shall we, here? We're going to go into your Amazon account. We're going to go right back to the beginning, all right? So I've looking here at August 2010.
Yes, so that would have been the summer break after my first year of university.
Okay, right, where were you at university?
Cambridge.
Very nice, very nice. And how was year one? Because some people have a bit of a wobble in year one. Were you in a kind of, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me moment, or were you not?
No, I was very much in the, this is the best thing that's ever happened. I mean, I sort of, well, I went to my local comprehensive in Northwest London, and that's the sort of world that I knew existed. And then suddenly 18-year-old me was transported into this place where I got to live in a castle with a pub in it. Like, that's why would that not be amazing?
Oh, my God. You basically go and live in a National Trust property, don't you, when you go there?
Yeah, and like all of the people who went to like very fancy schools and what have you, I was like, well, you're missing out on the full impact of this, because you, this is just like, oh yeah, well, obviously everywhere looks like this, like my house looks like this, so why would it not?
I would imagine.
Whereas I'm like, that's stone. What?
I would imagine that if I had got to such a place as that, I would just spend the first year just looking at just like aghast. Do you know what I mean? Like aghast. Did you feel like, yeah, I deserve to be here, this is all good? Or were you just going, they've made a terrible mistake?
Yeah, you should always feel that they've made a terrible mistake. That's a...
Yeah, it's a good approach to life. All right, fine. Well, talking of approaches to life and philosophies, we have got, on the 22nd of August 2010, we've got a whole bunch of things bought here. The Myth of Sisyphus by someone called Albert Camus. He sounds great, Albert. It sounds a bit like Albert Camus. Yeah. But
old Albie Cams.
Albie Cams. And we've got also George Orwell, Books v. Cigarettes, both part of the Penguin Great Ideas theory series.
Yeah.
Tell us more.
Well, this is exactly the sort of thing that pseudo-intellectual 19-year-old would want to have, in that, like, they feel, particularly when you're that, like, you're like, well, this is very clever that I've got these. And fundamentally, it's just like a little pamphlet. The return to effort ratio is very strong. And then, yeah, I could, you know, stand around with my rollies discussing the fact that one must imagine Sisyphus happy and so is not it, really know.
Which is the Sisyphus one? Is that the flying too close to the sun or not?
That's Icarus.
Oh, you... No wonder I went to Warwick, for God's sake. Which one's Sisyphus?
Yeah. No. My sister went to Warwick as well, and she's constantly being like, "Ah, here, stop flying too close to the sun, like Sisyphus." I don't have the heart to tell her.
It's a Warwick thing.
Yeah. And it's like, my brother-in-law went to Warwick as well, so he's backing her up. I've got nowhere to go.
Listen, mate, you can take your castle in the sky. We had a fucking art centre, yeah? So...
I've been to that art centre.
Yeah, I'm sure you have.
I've both been when I was visiting my sister, and I've performed there.
A nice moment. Is that...
Yeah, really, because my sister's 8 years older than me, so it was, like, going up to visit her... was like, you know, her being at university was the most grown-up thing that you could possibly imagine.
Yes.
So when I was like, you know, like 11, when I went to Warwick Art Centre and we went to see something like a physical theatre sort of thing. And it was really cool. The sort of thing that you sort of really appreciate as a child and then... feels sort of scary and like, oh no, will I understand that as something the older that you get?
Yeah.
And everything. But when you're a kid, you're just like, oh yeah, sure, this is happening. Cool, why not?
let it all in. But I had the same thing here. So I've got two brothers who are 8 and 10 years older than me. And the youngest one by a mile always ends up being the show off. This is what happens to us.
Right, okay. So in many ways, so this entire discussion is just... us rehashing sort of all of the sort of inevitable mental consequences of our parents fucking late.
Yeah. I mean, I see it now when I'm my second kid. I don't give a shit about my second one. I put all the effort and imagination into the first one, and he plays beautifully. The second one just sits on the screen. I'm like, fuck. So I must have been totally neglected.
What's the gap between the two of them?
Yeah, I'd love to say it was only 3.5 years. Just
right. Okay.
I've got very short attention.
My mother said exactly the same thing. That she was like, when your sister was a baby.
Yeah.
And they're like, God, like, if she took the slightest knock from anything and what have you, you're like, oh my God, this is awful. And like, what can we do? Really need to protect this thing and make sure, like, and be as attentive as we possibly can. And then 8 years older, I come along, and apparently they were like, yeah, they basically just bounce. You can just dribble them around the plate. Like, that'll be fine.
It's like your first child you see as a kind of, as a raw egg out of the fridge, and you can't imagine dropping it. And then someone whispers in your ear, actually, it's hard boiled. So by this. By the time the next one's come along, you're like, thunk, 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 thunk. It's fine. Don't worry about it. It's terrible, mate. It's completely terrible. I very much connect with the idea of you doing it. It's incredibly impressive to end up at, you know, Cambridge studying. What were you doing? PPE? Because I'm saying philosophy.
It's so the Cambridge one was called SPS at that time, Social and Political Sciences.
But basically was PPE. That's basically what it was.
It was sort of that without the maths, really.
Oh, thank God. Oh, amazing. But do you think that part of the reason you did that and achieved so highly was having the older sibling and sort of wanting to perpetuate that? Because I remember seeing, like, my brother's essays when I was, like, you know, like, we're talking 10, 11, 12, and seeing his essays and thinking, my God, my brother is basically a professor. This is amazing. And you kind of try and want to fill that role. You want to do that. And then I ended up way over... I was way cleverer than them by the time I was 18. No offence to them. They're listening to this. They don't even know how to fucking work the podcast app, so it's fine. But I did. Academically, I did better than them because I feel like I saw them and wanted to perpetuate them.
But see, I think it's different because, like, I tried to read my sister's dissertation when she was 21, so I was 13 and everything. But the problem is, like, because she was doing sociology, that was the thing that I couldn't really get my head around. Whereas, like, if she'd been doing, like, English or something, then I would have at least been like, oh, this is something that not that the sort of English that you study at school is anything like what you'd end up doing at university, but at least I'd have a framework of, all right, so she's probably writing about books, trying to analyze them, think about that. Whereas, like, I didn't know what sociology, I didn't even know the word sociology other than the fact that that's what my sister did at university.
So I
was very, I could, like, she wrote her dissertation on the caste system in India. And I didn't know very much about that, even from a because as a family we never talked about it, because that was always seen as like, well, that's a very regressive thing, and who cares? Mm-hmm. So I didn't even really know. Like, I still don't know what caste I am. Mm. I don't think it's either, like, I don't think I'm either one of the top guys or the bottom guys. I think we're sort of floating somewhere.
Is that what your sister said in her dissertation? Because that is a very basic dissertation.
I just feel like if we were the top guys, one of my grandmothers would have mentioned it at some stage. and they haven't, so...
Also, we've got the George Orwell here as well. I fucking love George Orwell because I remember reading... when I was about 16, Keep the Aspidistras Flying. And he's just, I think almost 95% of the ideas washed through me, very much like a stream, just washing away. Bits of it, I maybe retain the odd bit of intellectual moss from it. But basically, he just writes so simply, doesn't he, George Orwell? It's just like reading paperback fiction, isn't it? It's so easy to read.
Yeah. Well, which sort of explains, I guess, the massive popularity among teenagers, because definitely I was of a similar age when I started reading him. And yes, it is, but that was very much in his rules of writing, right? Like, he was always use the plainest language that you conceivably can and everything. And these things, were supposed to be accessible. And if you think about it, like, given that one of his books is basically like, what if the Russian Revolution but pigs? but to the extent that when I started learning about the Russian Revolution later, sort of in my mid-teens, I was like, gosh, this is a lot like Animal Farm, isn't it?
Can you imagine being at Cambridge and saying, oh, so like Animal Farm? Can you imagine?
It's quite
extraordinary, isn't it, that he set it, because you could almost do it, read that book to an 8 or 9 year old. Like, come on, Chomsky, step up. You guys, you are complicating things. Do you know what I mean? Who's doing that these days?
Well, I think that that's very true. And I think that, like, certainly I found when I was reading stuff at university, initially... sort of there's this real shock of, and it was always largely sort of like French theorists and philosophers, and maybe I was just reading bad translations or what, but it was always like, it always seemed just really, really complicated. And I would, like, asking friends on my course, like, can you make heads or tails of this? I've got no idea what the guys are attracting. And they were like, no, it's pretty complicated. And at first you feel bad. And then after a while, you go, like, look, I'm sitting down and reading this, like, entirely sober and devoting my attention to it, and I'm not an idiot. Yeah. And if I'm not able to make head or tails of it, that's a you problem as a communicator, not a me problem as the person understanding it.
Yes.
That's why I love comedy so much, right?
Yes.
Because jokes are dense information packed in, and the laugh is you getting it, right? You have to understand the thing, and it's so lovely. Like, so yeah, that's what comedy is. Such like a simple way of communicating complex information.
Yes.
That I really can't stand now whenever I read extraordinarily turgid prose.
Yes.
I'm like, well, you're trying to make yourself sound fancy.
Yes. So
and
true.
And I think it's covering up for the fact that you've got fuck all to say.
It's so true. It's all decoration and fripperies, and you're putting fairy lights all over this stuff. What are you actually telling me? I love that idea as well. That's always been the satisfying thing about comedy, is it's like, it's, I was going to say it's like poetry, that's too crass. It's like a zip file. Like, I'm going to send you a zip file.
That's exactly how I think of it.
You guys are going to decompress this zip file now. It's all compacted in here, and it's just going to land. And if it doesn't, that's my bad. It's not because you haven't got the right decompression software. That is my bad as the sender of the zip file. And that is, well, having said that, there's a lot of comedians, myself included, I will often use the audience as the reason for not getting stuff.
Like,
famously. But basically, yeah, it's on you, man. It's on you. And academics don't seem to have that same thing, do they?
But I think that this is also like part of the reason. Because I, towards the end of my degree, I think it was like, oh, well, I'm so interested in political philosophy and social theory and stuff like that, that maybe it would be interesting to carry on in academia for a while. And I applied for a master's and didn't get it, which was absolutely the correct call on the part of the University of Oxford, where I applied to for it.
What did you apply for a master's in?
Political theory.
Right.
But my personal statement may as well just have been me repeatedly saying, I am not ready for the real world. Please don't make me go to the real world. And they would have been a lot more accepting of that, where the fact that there's another box, which is like, do you have independent funding for this? And I was like, obviously not. So it's basically like, could you give me money so that I just don't have to be afraid?
It's a horrible time. Leaving university is a really miserable time because you've got to face up to the real world. I mean, you were doing that. When did you leave uni? Like then, 2012, I guess?
2012, yeah.
You're leaving it. It's a difficult time. There is all your friends disperse. Everyone sort of just goes everywhere. It's a really, really unpleasant time. So the idea of staying on for a master's, everyone I know who's done a master's is a fucking coward. Like, when you see them with those letters after their name, is it MA that goes for a master's? I'm like, yeah, that's Latin for coward. Yeah. That's fine. But then they know it. They all admit it. My nephew, he's like 25 and he's doing a fucking PhD. King of the cowards, mate. King of the cowards. It's fine. It's fine. Don't be ashamed of it. Don't be ashamed of it. Fine.
Yeah. Well, so basically I was like, oh, do I want to carry on just like writing this academic stuff that I love reading and whatnot? But then it was exactly that about the way that those things are communicated. And you realize it because it's a very insular group just writing for one another and students,
yes.
Right? Like it's so if you publish a book that you've worked really, really hard on and is a very important thing and like you've come up with good research or what have you, but who's reading that? Other people who have the same job as you as a professor of X, Y, and Z and people who are studying X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And you've got to be very, very lucky to break out of that sort of situation.
It's nicher than this podcast.
Yeah, that's fair. Exactly.
That's fair. It's true.
Whereas with comedy, like we've got, it's basically the only sort of like, I mean, there are such things as public lectures and what have you. Not many people go to them. But as a stand-up, it's basically like this is the last sort of remaining thing of just public oratory where you're like, these are my ideas about the world. And it doesn't have to be your ideas about the world. I love seeing people do silly one-liners or silly songs or whatever.
Yeah.
But you have the ability to do that if you want to. And that's a really lovely thing. And to be able to articulate the way that you see the world or think about things to an audience larger than fellow academics in your discipline.
Yeah. Beyond the mosh pit full of dons. Out to the outside world. And then, let me skip ahead now. So we're still in 2010. And we have got a load of things on the 30th of December. You dropped 45 big ones here.
Oh, yeah.
Go on, Boog here. Nice stuff to read as well. On the gap in between Christmas and New Year, everyone wants to read Penguin Great Ideas on the Suffering of the World. That's the nice light stuff as you go into the new year. That's by Arthur Schopenhauer. Schopenhauer.
Yeah, the quote that's on the front of that book is still... I think part of the reason that I like... It's like... I realize that lots of the things that I really like are just because they contain jokes. Like, good philosophy and interesting philosophy inevitably contains jokes, or like things that aren't like, they're not designed to make you laugh, but it's like, I really like rap music because rap music is very funny.
Yeah.
People are always making like little jokes and things of them. But like, yeah, the famous line from On the Suffering of the World is, that a simple calculation to work out if the amount of pleasure in this world exceeds the amount of pain is to compare the feeling of the animal engaged in eating with the feelings of the one being eaten. What a neat little...
That's nice. I like that. This is all big stuff. Also, are you on some sort of deal with Penguin? These guys are absolutely nailing it with you. Penguin social scientist. Yeah. Discipline and Punish, The Birth of the Prison. I mean, Jesus Christ. I suppose when you're stuck at home with your family, The Birth of the Prison feels right. But again, this 30th of December. Foucault? Michel Foucault?
Yeah, Foucault.
Foucault, okay.
Discipline and Punish was Foucault.
Go on, tell us.
I just find it very interesting, like, because I think, like, so the way that I sort of understand a lot of the world is largely through the prism of, like, the thinking of Nietzsche, who most people are like, wasn't he that Nazi guy? No. Very importantly, no. Right? That is absolutely not that sort of thing. And I always thought that, his ways of seeing the world and stating that, you know, there aren't sort of absolute truths or absolute ways of looking at the world and need to inform everything sort of historically contingent and dependent, and that even like morality can have a history and not just be. And so that's something that Foucault really ran with, and I think informed Geuss as well. The Birth of the Prison is very like looking at the movement of the body, the body as the site of punishment, really. And the fact that it like used to be just like very violent on the body. And we've moved to a situation where it's like, you've been naughty, go to a little room for ages. And just like how that works and what that says about power at different, in different types of society. And if, for example, like, you know, one could readily imagine that if you have, less centralized state in like the late 1700s, early 1800s or something like that, and there's just like the king who's some guy ages away who you're never going to encounter, then maybe the maintenance of power in a environment like that does mean that if you offend the law, then bloody retribution is what's going to be, because that like that can better cement the power of something very far away and very abstract. Whereas now, when like the state is around you constantly, and everything, right? Like if you get in a car and you're doing that because you have the license from the DVLA and there's a speed camera, and then you're like a final do. It's like, we don't need to give you 40 lashes for going at 35 in a 30.
I don't know. Sometimes when I get those fines, I do think, oh, imagine if I just got whacked once on the back. Just because I'm really tight. And like, 65 quid or just being hit really hard.
Do you think that'd be an option? But then, I don't know, maybe you'd just get like intentionally speeding masochists.
Just guys wearing gimp masks going as fast as possible. Yeah, hit me, Your Majesty, hit me, Your Majesty. Toast to all my love, thank God, toast to OJ says, I was disappointed by this book. We're talking, let's not forget, about Discipline and Punish, The Birth of the Prison. Imagine being also... Very quickly, before I get into someone's review, imagine being the first person to arrive in a brand new prison. You'd be so torn, wouldn't you? Because you'd be like, oh, brand new. Oh, lovely. That's nice. Oh, no, I'm
yeah,
still...
Yeah, yeah, like, that new jail smell.
I am the first person to cry for my mother in this prison. Yes.
It's, well, on the subject of, you know, in Paddington 2, which I watched two or three times over the course of the Christmas period, because it's that and Paddington 1 are basically the greatest films ever made.
The greatest films ever made, and how Hugh Grant didn't get an Oscar for his role in Paddington 2 will
yeah, I know, honor. Nominated, but that's not good enough.
Not good enough.
No, he deserved it. But yeah, like when Paddington is in jail in that, I was just like, this jail is actually quite nice. Like it's nicer than some places I've lived in London, for sure.
Did you feel yourself turning into a Daily Mail reader?
Yeah. These guys, they get cupcakes, they get marmalade.
And they're singing and dancing. They're putting on shows for the guards. For God's sake, they should be punished.
Yeah, hang that bear. That's what I say.
Yeah, a corporal punishment version of Paddington 2 would be a much shorter film. He burgled someone and he was hung from the neck until dead. The end of the movie. OJ says, I was disappointed by this book. Well, OJ, of course, would be disappointed. OJ's never been to prison in his life. I wasn't... Genuinely, he's called OJ. I wasn't going into this with any political stance in mind, just mostly wanting to have an analysis presented of history's practices on various types of criminal punishment. Well, it really didn't take long at all, and I mean within the first 50 pages, for some serious red flags to pop up, which were factual errors very easy to clear up. The hypothesis and theory presented in this book seem uninformed. There are some great and interesting anecdotes in here, but when tries to make a case, it simply falls flat on its face. But then they have written flat on it is it apostrophe S's face. So
yeah, but then I think that, and this is a thing that's been leveled at Foucault in many ways, like in the history of sexuality in particular, people are like, you basically just made that up, didn't you? But it's I think that when one knows that, it's important to remember that so much in philosophy is about vibes. And
can you say that in a seminar?
Yeah.
I'm just vibing on this stuff here. I've read Sophie's World. I can do this.
And so I think that that's why I like writers like him, because it's like how, you know, like people hundreds of years ago and stuff would just be like, I reckon this is what the sun is. And everyone's like, like, you don't know.
Yeah, can you disprove it? No, therefore that's what it is.
I mean, admittedly, doing stuff like that in the second half of the 20th century when Foucault was writing was like,
a bit late on for that game.
People can check stuff now.
Shit. I do often think that I'd love to go back in time and just be really fucking smart.
Yeah,
go back like 200-300 years and just, hey guys, before you do this operation, give that little rinse. You're welcome. The difference I could make.
Well, do you know the story about the first guy who said like we should really wash things before operations and whatnot? So this hundreds of years ago, I think in Italy. And so he was like, you know, just worked out, as it was surprising that people hadn't before, that, you know, certain people were dying really quickly after medical procedures and other people weren't. And he's like, oh, well, it turns out when you like clean stuff a bit, that helps and everything. Mm-hmm. But people didn't just think that he was wrong. Like he got like essentially sectioned for thinking that.
No.
Yeah, and the rest of his life, like, he was sort of locked up, like, as a lunatic for suggesting that people clean surgical implements and stuff like that.
Oh, my God. And just bit of lemon juice. Put some lemon juice on the knife.
Yeah. Oh, get in there, you nut.
Wow. Is that true? That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Get in that room and stay in that room. We need to go buy leeches. Yeah. And I'm running low on mercury. So.
Oh, my God. We got to go. Also, the one I always think about is the most medieval, and it happened relatively recently, was the bleeding idea. You're ill. We're going to drain your blood. You're going to drain your body of its life source. I'm just going to bleed you. Like, it's incredible that they ever thought that would work.
Yeah. It's a Dr. Nick joke in The Simpsons, isn't it? I have a theory that you have too much blood.
What's the purchase history of this jokester? Stay tuned for my mate bought a toaster.
So we've done 2010. There you are. You've just finished your first year at university. And then we're racing ahead 10 years, right? We're going to top and tail with you on this one. And we're going to come crashing into 2021. Anything we need to know about that's happened in the preceding decade in a sentence? You can put subclauses in the sentence.
My 20s.
Right.
And they're out the way
right.
now.
Right. Done, done, done. When did,
the main thing that I used Amazon for in my 20s was buying rolling papers and filters because they were cheaper to buy in bulk. And now, having given up smoking, I have less need for Amazon.
Do you vape? Are you fully given up?
I did vape until mid-December, and I stopped that. Now, so I've got a patch on currently. But yes, this has been the longest time that I've been without any sort of thing in my mouth.
But to keep the French theme of roll-ups going, now you've just taken up croissants.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. It's probably less healthy than a cigarette, really. If you're starting your day with a cigarette and a croissant, is the croissant's going to kill you before the cigarette does?
It's the croissant's going to kill you first. All right. So 2021. Right. We are in March 2021. I mean, this is a classic. This is a classic. Right. This is how the young, enthusiastic academic at Cambridge has become an adult. He's bought a fan of an element. I love this show.
Well, this is the thing. Right. Okay. So our oven wasn't working, and it was clearly a problem with the element and everything. And my flatmate called up the people at Bosch, and they said, yeah, someone can come around and replace that element, and it'll be £200.
Oh, fuck you, Bosch.
I know. Then I was like, well, let's just Google what it is that we need and everything. Yeah. And we looked that up, and the fan element itself was like £20 and everything. So that was a 90% saving on what it could have cost to do this. And yes, it is true that the oven now makes noise sometimes, right?
Does the fire alarm also make a noise?
I think, look, we haven't died yet. And this is March 2021, bear in mind, okay? So we've gone nearly a year. Yes. This is like 10 months that we've been through, perfectly safe and everything. I think it's just that when we put the back plate back in or something, like something's just going up against the fan or something. I don't know.
Fuck it. If it's not making a smell, live with.
No smell.
Because there's nothing worse than the burning metal smell or burning flesh smell. That's a depressing smell. You know things have gone wrong. But I did a similar thing with, it's very similar, in fact. We have a Bosch oven as well. Mm. And the light went, but it's the light that, not like a heating light, but it's a special, obviously super strong oven light. And they quoted like £300 to come and fix it. And I bought one on Amazon. And I put it in and I fixed it. The filament went after 3 weeks and the oven is now dark. But that's fine. I still saved a lot of money, but I have a dark oven. But that makes, you know, cooking a bit more exciting when you open the thing. And,
I think that's absolutely fine. Like, because you have to calculate in this life how you want to value things, right? Yes. And you quite reasonably decided that you valued being able to see what's going on in your oven at substantially less than £300. Yes. And so you wouldn't have got £300 worth of utility out of that purchase.
No, there's a number for everything. Whereas the number, you've got loads of food out of £40 worth of fan of an element. I mean, you've done well there. Mm-hmm. That's a really, because food is absolutely vital.
Yeah. You full on die if you don't have that.
Full on die. So did you get stuck in? Are you quite DIY-y or did your flatmate do the dirty work?
I was sort of the Sue DIYer. The equivalent of the Sue chef?
The exec producer.
I was handing him things and holding things and taking things away and whatnot. But he seemed on top of things.
And can I predict that the moment in March 2021 where you put the oven on and it worked was the greatest moment of your year?
I mean, I also got engaged in 2021, so yeah, you're right.
I do not withdraw the statement. It's true though, because you fucking look at you when you fix a thing with your hands.
I had to say, Emma, would you make me the second happiest man in the world? The first being, of course, the version of me that existed in mid-March.
Yeah, it's fine. And she'll go, oh, when you fix the oven, the fan on. Yeah, of course. I completely understand.
We didn't even know each other at that point. So.
I feel obliged to ask you now, how did the engagement go? How was the proposal? Was it standard? Did you
very
do something
well,
crazy?
Well, it wasn't something that I expected to do or she expected me to do. We sort of started seeing each other and a month later got engaged. Yeah.
No!
It's good stuff, actually.
That is the good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. What I really like, the one part of it that, like, I think this is the bit of, like, laughter that I will forever regret not having been around for, is that when she told, so she lives with some friends of mine, which is why I met her in the first place, and there's a couple who live in that house, been together for several years, and everything, and she told her friend Courtney this was happening, and Courtney's like, oh my god, that's amazing, and it's really good news. Obviously it is, it's very soon, like that's a pretty, and her boyfriend Chris just went, well, I guess when you know, you know. And like, apparently you could just see all of the emotion and realization on his face develop as he clocked exactly what he'd said next to his partner of 5 years or whatever.
Part two of that sentence is, would you like to marry me?
Oh my god, that's amazing. And have they proposed to each other yet in that couple?
No.
Oh fuck. Oh, that is dropping. Oh god, that's awful. You'd open a window after that one.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, so it was like, I guess when you know, you know. And in other news, I will be moving to a monastery in rural Belgium, and I will not be accessible for some time.
This has been a great life. Goodbye, life. That's delightful. So in many ways, what's the name of your fiance?
Emma.
Emma, so she was the fan of an element, 2100 watt fan of an element in your life. Like, she just simply came along, it fitted, it worked, and now things are hot. Yeah. Guys, this is so good.
Yeah. And so occasionally lovely. She'll make a noise to indicate that she's displeased. Oh, mama made me butter toaster. Riding online shops just like a roller coaster. So fun when you're buying all of the strangest things online, like books, weight sets, and posters. Come on, hear the best of the best of my mate bought a toaster.
2 days later, what did you buy? £23.99 on the look, here we go. There's a bit of showbiz now. We had to get to the showbiz.
Yeah,
eventually.
Very showbiz.
iPad tripod, the extendable aluminium alloy tripod stand. Someone's doing well for themselves.
Yeah.
Bit of self-taping, bit of gigs from home.
Gigs from home, I got sort of the webcam. And I don't know if you felt that, I don't know how much of this sort of setup you've had in the past, but when we had to switch towards doing Zoom gigs and whatnot, I was very adamant that, you know, I started hearing of friends who were like buying microphones, buying webcams, all of this sort of thing. And yeah. I really wanted to be like, no, I'm not I refuse to believe that this period of our life is going to be long enough that yes. it's going to necessitate that.
The iceberg was small. I'm going back to my room. That approach.
Then obviously that turned out not to be the case. So I had to, slightly late in the game, bite the bullet and get, I didn't get the webcam off Amazon, which is why you didn't see it in my history. I did get this microphone from there though. But yeah, so I got that. And then yes, the iPad thing was for, because all of the castings for things, like I never get parts in things, but you know, I give it a good old go every now and then. So, you know, I've only ever been in like film and TV as an actor when I've been directly asked. I've never successfully auditioned for anything. And so,
if your agent's listening to this, really withdraw that comment.
Yeah.
They are spending so much. My agent's amazing, putting me up for all these things. And when every single one I don't get, of which there's been one or two, I'm like, I'm so sorry, you sorted this all out. And I'll fucking hell. But I like to think of myself, I'm not a professional actor, I'm a professional auditioner. You know, it's an important thing.
Exactly. But this, so this tripod, you know, I bought now 10 months ago for £24. You know, financial return on investment has been zero. That's what, nothing that I filmed with it has done anything
well,
for me.
To be honest, if you got a part in, say, Doctors, you need to get two parts in Doctors to pay that back. let me tell you.
Yeah. But it's genuinely very good. Like, I don't know if anyone listening has ever had to, like, you know, like, lean a phone or an iPad or something on something to try and, you know, it doesn't need to be a self-tape. Like, you find yourself doing this every now and then. Then the tripod's really good. Actually, what I just thought of, which I'd never thought of before, but would be really good. Occasionally, when I'm cooking, you know, just chopping stuff in the thing, and I like to have my iPad on to watch something, and I, like, put that on the kitchen island or whatnot, yeah, and have the news on or anything. But I've just realised that actually, on the tripod, that'd be a much more favourable sort of height, yes, and everything. Yes. To be watching something on that could also be good. It doesn't need, yes, to be for filming things.
No, absolutely. I've done the same thing. I've used the tripod I bought for my iPhone for self tapes. I set it up on the kitchen table for my kids to have a FaceTime chat with Granny. Like,
lovely.
Lovely. And more has been got out of that than out of the thing it was, yeah, bought for. So that's great.
Can I just say, so both of us own one of these things,
yes,
and
yes,
neither of us have, yes, made any money from,
which is why we're doing some fucking podcast. We should be filming Wonka right now, mate. Everyone I know is in fucking Wonka at the moment. Honestly, they're all signed NDAs. They're not, I know about eight people who've been in fucking Wonka, and here we are doing a pissing podcast.
I love it. Basically, I feel as though so many, like, comics particularly have bought these things, and we're not actors, but we were like, shit, acting, they're filming stuff, there's no gigs, right, let's give this a go. That so many comics have bought these things that unless, like, Nish is the next Bond, then absolutely none of us are making any money. That's like, one of us is going to have to get a part so big to make up, yeah, for all of the money that our profession has sunk into this crap.
Yeah. Economically, it's a 2008 we're looking at here for all this. It's a fucking disaster. It's a tripod 2008. Listen, moving on. We're running out of timer here, but I particularly enjoy here what's happened on the 28th of October 2021. You have spent £275 on something which only the other day I saw, and my friend Joel's got one of these, and I was like, I need to get one of these. You have spent £275 on a turntable.
Yes.
Absolutely brilliant.
So I did it because I am a middle-class man living in London who turned 30. And that's what you do. It's either you get very into coffee, very into craft beer, or very into vinyl. Yes. And I used to be far too big a drinker to get properly into craft beer, and coffee just makes me shit myself. So got the record player instead.
I've got the same problem with coffee.
Yeah.
But I'm really into coffee. And it's a real issue. I thought it was milk, so I started having oat milk, which again is that's a sign of when, same as everything you've just said, but 40s, right? You get into the 40s and I'm like, oh, I think I've got a dairy intolerance, but I love my specialty coffee that I make myself in the kitchen. Shit my pants. Why does coffee... Like, I know it's supposed to be a bit of a laxative, but, like, am I making it too strong? Am I allergic to it?
It's just something in the constitution. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, so it would have been pre-COVID, working on the MASH report, and we were working on it in the offices in Shepherd's Bush of Zeppotron, and there was the Nespresso, the machine with the pods and everything, and which has the varying intensities, 12 being the most full-on one. And one day, I was like, everyone else was getting the 12s, and I would normally have a tea. And then one day, I was like, I'll try one of those. And I had that, and those are now called char killers in that office, because I had one sip of it, went, I'll be back in a minute, and then was just away for a while.
think Charles just prolapsed because of a pod.
Yeah.
That is extraordinary.
So, that was the thing. So the teas and coffees run, who would always just be like, so that's tea and three shark killers then?
Oh, yeah. My God. Please tell me someone's got one of those label machines and they've put a sticky label on the drawer with shark killers. That is fucking beautiful. I don't quite know how we've gotten to coffee making and shit ourselves from the turntable. But yeah. How is the turntable working out for you?
Really good. And I really like it. So I was always a person who, like, my sister is the more sort of like musical one of the two of us, knows more about music. I don't know. She doesn't play any instruments, and I do, but she's the more knowledgeable about that sort of thing. And I would find it very easy. Like, I would always find it relaxing to have music on or whatever, but never found myself doing it for whatever reason. And now that I've got this, it's just a really nice thing, like while cooking or if you've got people over for dinner or what have you, and you put a few albums on, it's just like, it's just a very nice thing to be able to, and to sit through something and whatnot, you know? It's like, it sort of reminded me of how, like, you know, I read loads of articles and very few books now. And this is the same thing. Like, it's like you go on, like, I love having Spotify and what have you, but you go on that and you're like, all right, this 3 minute song, this 3 minute song, this 3 minute song. Yes. But it is very nice. Like, last night, my parents came over for dinner and I just, with the croissants. I put a few Bob Dylan albums on. And my mum, when Mr. Tambourine Man came on, my mum was like, you know, this is the first song I ever learnt in English. And it was like this lovely thing. And we talked about, like, her music teacher at school when she first came to the UK, everything. It was a lovely thing that wouldn't have happened if we didn't have the and an album going on, you know.
Yes, they're more sociable, they're better fitted to people, there's no doubt about it. It's like thinking back to a time when I didn't look at Twitter within seconds of waking up. I used to stop tapes and turn them over. I used to stop my vinyl and turn it over. And the you know, my favorite album ever, The Queen Is Dead by The Smiths, you know, there is a very clear defining moment before Big Mouth where the album has to be turned over. Like, it's in two parts. It's built for that. Hey, there it is. Look, he's got it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Best album of all time. Best album of all time.
Look, it's tragic. It's tragic that their singer died.
Totally. So what happened to that guy? He had a nasty accident involving his mouth. Something like, being a Morrissey and Smiths fan was what I was known as. You know, I had the big sideburns, and I had about 20 Morrissey shirts, and I've just had to, basically the admin and cost of cancelling. Never let it be said that cancelling is an easy offhand thing to do. It's cost me money. I've had to buy new shirts to replace all my Smiths t-shirts. Poor me.
It was very fun when I took delivery of a couple of Smith's albums, and I opened it up in front of my fat mate, and it, as he saw me holding them, he was just like, I see you're a self-racist now.
Yeah, I mean, if you heard Morrissey song Bengali and Platforms, if only... Do you know this song? If only there was some indication, the National Front Disco. If only there was some indication that Morrissey
was that way. Oh, God.
So vinyl's been a success. Very good. My vinyl player is in the loft and I need to get it out. So this has been a good vinyl spiration. What's interesting then is 1st of November 2021, you've done really well here. You've bought a load of musical downloads. So vinyl's obviously going well. 2 days later, you've got Big Michael, Stormzy, The State I Am In by Ben Sebastian, again, one of my favourite bands. Octopussy by The Wedding Present, and For Tomorrow by Blur.
Yes, so this is one thing that I have found buying stuff online very useful for, because, you know, when I'm on tour and what have you, and just want to be able to say to a venue, like, this is the music that I would like before the show and during the interval and whatnot. And some venues, like, have some sort of deal with Spotify, and some places are like, no, we can't use that. So I found that the easiest thing was just have it all bought, have it all sort of on. I've got like an old phone of my dad's that I basically just use as a MP3 player, because that's still got a headphone jack and whatnot.
What's your walk-on music of choice?
And so what's it going to be? It was last year was Big Michael by Stormzy. which I really enjoy, because it just opens with "said I went mainstream, suck your mom, not top two, top one." And I thought that's such a, like, that's such a ridiculously arrogant way for a stand up to walk on stage that I really,
you better enjoy. Be fucking good. Yeah. If you're doing that.
I was like, no, I'm carrying like nearly 18 months of rust on me. Of course I'm not good enough for that as an intro.
In many ways, the intro is the best bit of the show.
Yeah, yeah. Which is why I found it so that. Funny. That's a joke for me.
They're the best jokes. You know that the idea of the digital load to carry around on tour and things like that is a lot easier. David Bowie famously used to travel around with two or three suitcases full of books. He was an obsessive reader, and he had to have his books with him all the time. So he used to have cases and cases of books, like basically a mobile library.
In this day and age, you'd just be on the Kindle, and that would be. A story that I heard about Bowie, which again I don't know if it's true, but I think it's a fun one. If it is, I hope it is. Much like the doctor hand washing thing. Got no idea. I think that's pretty true. But
stick with it.
I heard that Bowie used to like sit outside cafes with a newspaper in Greek. Do you know this?
No.
So, because like people would, and he couldn't read Greek or anything like that, but to stop people coming up to him, like people would just be walking past and thinking, God, that Greek guy looks a lot like David Bowie.
That is genius.
Yeah, very clever.
That is genius. I love that. There's no way it could be David Bowie because that's good. It's a great newspaper. I did a similar thing. I remember when I was first living in London, I read a French book on the tube to try and impress people that I was reading a French book, but people just probably thought I was French. How fucking stupid is that?
London, in a city with one of the largest French populations on
Earth.
Can you read French?
I don't know. I didn't read it. I was too busy looking for attractive ladies to be impressed by me reading a French book. All right, listen, final thing here, and this is something we've mentioned already. This is, it's the best film ever made. I think that has to be established factually now forever. Paddington 2, not so called because it's a sequel, but in fact because that's how many times you have to watch it as soon as you buy it. It's just a complete masterpiece and comes in at exactly 1 hour, 30 minute on the nose.
Oh, I didn't even know that about it, but that is perfect. Mm. Like, have you seen this stuff about like with this new Batman film's going to be nearly 3 hours and whatnot? And it's like, it's fine when you do that with a Bollywood film because they have an interval.
Everything. Do they build an interval? You go and see
a film in India and everything, and it's like, it'll be an hour and a half, and then you can go out and have a wee, and then come back for the next hour and a half.
Is Bollywood run by comedy club promoters? Gotta have an interval, mate, for the bar. For the bar take. Wow, I didn't know that.
But yeah, so I can't be dealing with these Hollywood films with the run rate twice the size of a human bladder. Paddington 2 is extraordinary. I'd not seen either of them until the end of 2021. And I think it was that the first one was on Netflix. And so just one afternoon, Emma said, I'd like to watch just like a nice film. And we saw that was on there. And we're like, I've heard that's a good thing. Like, I've heard it got really good reviews. It might just be a kid's film, but let's check it out. And then we watched it. And at the end of it, I was just like, okay, so now we're watching Paddington 2, right? That's how do we get that?
Straight into it. We don't need to go on about how good it is. It's a complete masterpiece, full of great jokes. It's gorgeous.
Every so often I get sad when I remember he's not real. Just like scuttling about London on his little scrapes.
But also Ben Whishaw is in Bond, and I'm just watching Bond and I'm like, Paddington's doing some good tech there, isn't he, to help James Bond. I can't think of someone, and correct me if I'm wrong, listeners at ToasterPod on Twitter, I can't think of an actor whose voice is so associated with the cartoon, and yet when they carry on acting, I'm just looking at them going, no, that is that cartoon character.
Really?
Well, maybe there is. There are probably dozens. People will tweet us now, but I hear his voice, and I'm just like, that's Paddington doing...
No,
doing.
That's true, because normally when you get like celebrity in like a Pixar film or whatever... And you'd be like, that is Eddie Murphy. And you're thinking of the man, Eddie Murphy, not the cartoon character that's being played. But you're saying that this time the cartoon overrides
he has so in, because I knew who he was before and I'd watched him in stuff before, but the impact of how brilliant that character is and how closely tied it is with his actual voice for me means I can't watch him anything else now. And I wonder if there are other people. What a lovely curse that would be to have.
That's really fascinating, because at least like Bond and like the role of Q is a bit silly as well, so that fits it. But I just imagine watching something quite heavy, like watching London Spy, which is very good.
Yes.
Like, has Ben Whishaw... Oh, Ben Whishaw's trying to like discover the truth about his lover's death. And it's like, God. Oh no, Paddington, you loved that guy so much and now he's dead.
Well, maybe his aunt could come over from Peru and help him to find the truth. I think it's amazing. I think it's wonderful. I also love the fact about Paddington 2, which I think I've told before on this podcast. The scene at the end with Hugh Grant dancing in the prison was the first thing he filmed when he joined the project. So
really?
his first day or two of filming was that.
That's so great.
Love that fact. Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah.
Listen, from high philosophy to the best film ever made, this has been a wonderful tour of your purchases. It's been a wonderful tour of you here. I think you're fantastic, a brilliant stand-up comic. You've got a tour happening at the moment, is that right, or coming up?
Yes, I'm touring a show called Dress. So tickets and dates are at ahirshah.com.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been really nice to hang out and let me have a rifle through your bits and bobs.
Absolute pleasure. Cheers.
That is Ahir Shah, and that is today's episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster. Thank you, team. I hope you enjoyed yourselves. Listen, if you get a chance, I know I go on about this, please just switch off if you're bored of this already. Do jump on to your nearest podcast platform and give us a lovely 5-star review if you can, because it really helps and more people discover the show, and that's just a lovely thing for my ego. I'm not going to lie to you guys. That's what it's all about. Next week, the brilliant Maisie Adam is going to be coming on. She has a story about a lava lamp that might be one of the funniest things I've ever heard on My Mate Bought a Toaster. So make sure you're here next week for that. If you want that in advance, you know about the Patreon, .com/toasterpod. That is available for your ears now. £4 a month? Come on, it's a bargain. See you soon now. Bye.
It's My Mate.